So you got a real booster at the starting point.
We got a real booster at the time. And I it was crazy times, I have to say. We really did our best.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of BARC, and my guest today is Jasmin Weimüller. She is Global Lead for the Data and AI Academy at BASF. She had the unique chance to build up a new academy for data and AI on the green field, and we will hear from her learnings and experiences, how to do that. We talk about the formats they are offering, the content they are offering, but also the people that she thinks are really key for the success of such an academy. We also talk about how do you measure actually success and what are the most important key success factors here to bring such an initiative to life and to really bring benefit to the business. Lots of learnings in here in an episode about literacy. Enjoy it. Hey, Jasmin, welcome to the Data Culture Podcast.
Hi, Carsten. Good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
Great to have you, obviously. Jasmin, you had the maybe unique chance to build a data and AI academy from ground up, greenfield, and not everyone gets this chance. And I thought that's a great topic to talk about and learn from your experiences and also learn from your thoughts and how you set this up. I think that's an interesting question. But before we discuss that, maybe you could give us a bit of a background. How did that happen? Why did BASF invest in a new data and AI academy?
Yes, absolutely. There was definitely a month to year long build up to that point where I was able to build this up as greenfield as you ever get in a company, which is definitely an almost unique experience, I would say, and a great opportunity. So we actually started as a data science project team. So I joined BASF as a data scientist, had done the chance to become a team lead, and we ran several big data science projects across BASF. So my team was and is part of our central IT and is basically partnering with our different divisions at BASF to run data science projects. That's actually how we started around about 2.5, almost 3 years now ago. And as a smaller topic, I took over ownership of, say, you know, building up the AI expert community, trying to make sure that experts are well connected. And there was a small side project at the time, which was back then like one intranet page which had really nice resources to learn about AI and on. So it was almost on already back then, it was called AI Academy. And I said, like, okay, if I take this over as well, and I have like, generally, I have a passion for learning and for also coaching others. So that was actually fitting. I said, if I take this over, I want to build this as much as I can and want to make it a real thing, not just a side project. So back then, we had kind of an arrangement in my team also was 80-20, meaning that with 80% of the time, the colleagues were running data science project. And with 20% of the time, they were actually supporting the AI community plus this AI Academy initiative. So that's actually how we started to run the first offers in a kind of really guerrilla marketing atmosphere. So whoever had time, I requested and I basically, you know, asked to help us with, for example, coaching people from the business who didn't know about AI a lot. And we ran like the first virtual sessions at the time, put some efforts into this resource overview and library of, say, learning resources. And that's actually how we started. And so a lot of, say, passionate people came together and with this arrangement, it gave us a little bit of a capacity to do it. But unarguably, and that's what everyone will tell you, 80-20, like the projects always take precedence. And that is, I mean, natural and normal. But that's not how you can really pull off really a big initiative for a global company. So I saw pretty early on that if we really want to grow this further, and I already started to see the impact, like we need full-time resources at some point for this.
Excellent. Well, that's a great story. And I was wondering maybe for the setup. So you said you have a central data team in IT, and that's possibly supporting data projects across the enterprise, I would guess. Is that in parallel to other data teams, or is there a CDO, for example, or is that part of the IT? Maybe you could give us a little bit more background how that is organized.
Yeah, I would say we have also kind of a federated approach. So generally, as we do have a central IT, right, which is not just serving data and data science, but also like IT as a service, so which is mm-hmm. providing the laptops, which is making sure that our mm-hmm. infrastructure is running and everything that belongs to traditional IT as well. Plus, like the more AI data driven part of it, right? So that's part of the central IT. Having said that, yes, we do also have kind of satellite teams in the divisions as well. Sometimes like really bigger teams. Sometimes it's also distributed, like, for example, experts which are more integrated in the business teams and are closer to the business then, and usually then maybe also have a little bit more of a BI or data analytics background rather than maybe machine learning at that. So we do have this kind of federated approach, and the central IT in that sense act as a business partner to the divisions. And yes, we do have a CDO.
And this, I don't know, he or she is driving this. My question is, who did you have to persuade, or who is basically giving the budget for this? Because you said 80-20 is not working. I think everyone can relate to that. That's super normal. Projects are always first. And then at some point, you probably said, okay, if we want to do this right, then we need full-time resources. Or who's spending the money?
Yeah, our CDO is in the same sense our CFO. So that's Dirk Elvermann from our board. So I was not in touch with him to persuade him about the Data and AI Academy. I was very lucky to, from the very beginning, to find a big support in my direct manager as well as my skip manager. And my skip manager is leading the segment in which also my team is still in, which is digitalization of R&D and data science. So with these two colleagues from our management, I was mostly working on also the concept and showing the impact. Obviously, like by also having some really big supporters in the colleagues who took part in our offerings from the consumer side, like we started early on also with a executive coaching approach where we brought together, established colleagues from the data science expert side together with senior executives who said, I have an interest in learning about AI, or maybe I even have some ideas. I want to vet that for my organization. And we kind of did a matching. And by doing so, we were able to build like a really good network of supporters as well, who, in my opinion, were also vital to kind of help us persuade the rest of the organization and the management that this is a, investment worthy idea. And not gonna lie, I mean, you have to be at the right time, at the right spot. There's always a percentage of luck and timing in these initiatives. And our timing was that luckily we did start mid-2022 with our initiatives. And everyone knows that end of 2022, ChatGPT was released and was creating major buzz around AI. And so I came back Christmas break 2022, 2023. And back then our barely surviving, but our branding was already top of the notch. I made sure that with students' help, we had a really good front. So everyone was probably thinking there's way more resources behind it than we, actually had at the time. I came back from Christmas break and we had hundreds of requests in our mailbox, in our shared mailbox, kind of saying like, oh, I heard about this ChatGPT thingy. What can I do? What resources do you have? Can I get a coaching? And back then, we not just for executives, we sometimes even did for general offer one-on-one coachings. So limited amount of experts who definitely already had their hands full always came to hundreds of requests. And we were really like needing to sit down and thinking about how can we now best handle and try to satisfy as many requests that we can while, you know, building up proper processes still around automation also and getting further resources for this. Because already back then you could see this is like not just a temporary up, this is not just a temporary hype. Already like back then, early 2023, I feel that the organization understood very, very fast that this is something that will have a lasting and sustainable effect for BSF and any other major company.
So you got a real booster at the starting point.
We got a real booster at the time. And it was crazy times, I have to say. We really did our best. As mentioned, I was always a big believer in also having support and fresh perspectives in by students. So we anyway had a regular, turnaround of say working students, master students, bachelor students joining our team. So that was the time when I dedicatedly set out working student positions also for the Data and I Academy to help us survive this request. And it took another few months until we were really also as an organization, I think, at the right time to say, yes, we need to invest. And also, I think, a new regulation. And, you know, you could see already the trend coming down the line. I feel this was giving us another boost at some point to say, okay, we really need to have a structured approach behind that. We need to have a concept and we need to have the resources. And obviously, at some point, I think, any organization will then cross the make or buy decision, right? So this was definitely also of a very decisive point when we are also debating how much do we buy in, how much do we make ourselves.
Yeah, excellent. And now tell us about your curriculum. So what are you offering? And with that, I think we should also talk about make or buy. Yeah. So what's external, what's internal in a way?
Yeah, very good. So I already mentioned part of the offering, which was the coaching, both for business domain expert coaching in AI, as well as like getting senior executives on the same page regarding AI and, you know, discussing individual requests at that. So we saw that this very people-facing approach was actually helping a lot next to our already back then existing massive amounts of self-organized learning material, talking about e-learnings, talking about like handbooks, podcasts that we also recommended if someone is like more of a, you know, audio learner. And so from the very beginning, actually, we tried to make sure to have different formats in it for different style of learners. We also back then already differentiated into several target groups, among them all employees. So what is like the minimum that everyone should know about it? Leaders and senior executives, as well as, and that was very important and close to my heart. And I think also the one way to convince a lot of more experts to support us on this mission, also giving back to the AI expert curriculum, to the AI expert community with a curriculum for these experts. So not talking about this is how you learn Python, but more in the sense of what is really like BSF specifics that experts need to know. How can we support the onboarding of, for example, new data scientists joining BSF, no matter if this now is in central IT or in the division? So really trying to build also a cross-organizational community. So these were like the target groups, right? And now you can imagine that for each of these target groups, we had their own kind of dedicated curriculum consisting of different offers, different topics on, we usually put them on learning paths so that you know where to start. This is where you end. But everything was at the time also completely optional, voluntarily, right? So nobody was forced to visit. So that's why we also really needed to make sure that we have a strong brand, that we have awareness in the organization. So from the very beginning, we put also a lot of efforts in internal communications, in our branding, and visiting different parts of the organizations with a lot of virtual and live sessions.
Excellent. From a content perspective, maybe you could give us a little bit more detail. So obviously you mentioned a data science education. So AI obviously has is an important topic. What else?
Yeah, of course. So I would say mid-2023, we kind of has had generative AI paths for all of the different target audiences, right? With obviously different levels of complexity and details and elements. Next to that, since we're the data and AI academy, right, we also have a good part in data literacy curriculum at that, which is also about, you know, learning the data basics. Why do you need that? What are different versions of data visualizations? This is how you can do Power BI. So also this is part of the data and AI curriculum, mostly in self-organized material. So, and that's why I actually said it was not like from scratch, because we were lucky as a big company to already have established learning resource providers at our hands, you know, and big massive providers of massive open online courses, and that we were able to also curate into learning paths, and that we were able to consume, and basically there were no further boundaries for the colleagues, right? Because these were the established learning providers, which also, you know, are there for other areas, like if you want to learn generally about communication or leadership values, right? So we were quite in the lucky position to be able to source from two different learning providers and put together our learning paths, and while, you know, enriching that with also, say, freely available resources on the net, and which I think there's also really great resources out there. So this is not saying that this can only be done for big companies. I really believe also that small to medium-sized companies absolutely need to invest into their data and AI enablement and curriculum, especially now with the EU AI Act coming. And you don't have to have, like, you know, a big team for that. You can really start small with this as well.
Mm-hmm. Which learning providers are you using?
Yeah, we're using LinkedIn Learning and Udemy for Business.
Hi, it's Carsten. I wanted to inform you about a great offer if you want to improve data culture in your organization. We at BARC have developed the Data Culture Workshop. What we do is we discuss with you a list of the most promising and proven measures and initiatives that help organizations to improve their data culture. We bundled all of our experience we could gain over the last years in working with organizations that wanted to improve their data culture. At the end of the day, you have a prioritized list of measures and initiatives that are effective in improving data culture. I think it's a great offer. It bundles our experience, and in just one day, you really know what to do next if you want to improve data culture in your organization. Talk to me about the details. I'm looking forward to connect with you. Do you also have like your team or internal contributors, like recording videos or also contributing to the learning?
Yes. And that's why, I was early on trying to identify some supportive people and that I definitely ask for one or the other favor. And usually, like, you find some experts have really found a sweet spot between having their data and data science expertise, but being able to nicely present and communicate that to non-expert stakeholders. And I think these are the right colleagues and supporters that you need to also, you know, help extend the offerings in terms of sessions, to also give, like, you know, more advanced sessions as well. So we really sourced it from the expert community. Obviously, also a lot of colleagues from my team back then with their 20%, they were the core, we were the core organizational team behind that. So all of us gave several coachings themselves, several sessions. We used whatever language we had in our team as well, from ranging from German to English to Portuguese and Spanish, and to also give, like, you know, localized sessions, which was also requested already back then. So we were really crafty, I would say, with how to satisfy those requests. And that's when we got to the point that, and again, right timing, that we started a bigger initiative around data and AI, and it became part of our corporate program. With last year, right, having the chance of now being able to extend the team and have full-time dedicated resources, I was very clear on that I need to have full-time trainers or full-time, we call them coaches, who really can support with various sessions and, you know, who I can send to senior executive as well as our production community with very different needs, with very different maybe also, you know, communication styles. So you need a very, I think, also empathetic person with a very solid foundations, because, you know, that's what I really love about BSF. We're a really big scientific community, and people are sometimes asking questions. I'm like, wow, like, when do you get the time next to your other expertise to really get in that deep? So you really need to have a solid foundation in that role. And that is why it's really important to have people who have the sweet spot in their profile, being able to kind of translate while really making people feel very welcome. And, you know, I would say probably the something that you should not have in your profile if you do that is if you come across over as arrogant, maybe even due to their your like, you know, vast expertise, I feel people are really then shy and holding back and are not feeling brave enough to ask the questions. And I think that, you know, that is definitely for me a something that you cannot have. So you really need to be able to make people also feel welcome while showing that you have the expertise, you have the street credibility. But, you know, that's why I'm so adamant on in every session still that I personally also give to let people know, you know, there's no dumb questions. Please don't hold back. This is your time. Make the most out of that. So for me, that's one of the most important parts that I also then checked when thinking about, like, you know, what are the specific mm-hmm. people I would like to extend the team with.
Okay, interesting. Maybe a quick return to the topic of formats, because you mentioned, obviously, you have coaching offerings, which are more or less sound like one-to-one, so very close to the, let's call them, customer. But obviously that doesn't scale. And then you mentioned like the e-learning formats, so very scalable formats in e-learning, podcasts, whatever. Is there anything in between, like workshops, sessions, yes. conferences? What else is there?
Yeah. It's a really, really big mix. So we have something what we also call the social learning formats, which are, as you just mentioned, for example, also big internal conferences we call the Data and AI Summit that we ran for 4 years in a row. Right now, we are also seeing, like, again, to prepare that. So this is like a massive internal conference, which spans over multiple days, in the beginning, even weeks, which also has like a topic and a program next to it, and is was mostly virtual. But we also had one or the other, like, in-presence session, for example, in Ludwigshafen. We also have, like, AI community sessions and events for the expert community, not just in Ludwigshafen, but also in our other digital hubs, which were the strategic locations that I just mentioned. For example, we have one in Madrid, another one in Toronto, right? So where we also have then live events for the local expert community, and of course the business colleagues are invited as well, but having made sure that, you know, talks are going to be on an advanced level, because giving back something to the expert community. And also what we do is usually, I mean, what I'm a big believer in is also blended learning. So usually our formats are not 100% this or that, but trying to have a little bit of a mixture. So already when we did the coachings, for example, usually we have a assignment roadmap. So we leave the people out of their coachings with a homework or an assignment, which they do from the self-organized learning material until the next time. So that is just a blend of two, for example, formats, right? And this is still something that we do, for example, when we now do a bigger data literacy program, right? This is usually combining live virtual sessions with maybe some challenges that the employees have to do and then send to us so that we can see they're active with maybe some self-organized learning material next to the recording and everything. So, you know, anyone is invited to, even if they miss the live sessions, to still be able to catch up. And that's just the reality. No one has enough time, you know, to really just, you know, spend big proportions of their week work, obviously, with learning about data and AI. And data and AI is also not the only topic that is relevant for BSF, right? So we just have to live with a multi-complex environment and have to be, have to be able to also give smaller learning chunks and to be very effective in the amount that people can spend with us.
Super cool. How do you measure success? Is it like the number of participants, or do you also measure other other things?
Also here, I would say we really did a journey from the very beginning, right? So in the beginning, in our, say, V1 Data and AI Academy setup, we already did a lot of sessions, as mentioned. And all of these sessions, yes, we roughly estimated number of people attending, right? Obviously, we also tracked more like for our side, what was the language of the session? Was it virtual? Was it non-virtual? Is it also an internal versus, we already back then had a couple of external sessions to raise also a little bit of awareness for this topic. So these were the, say, natural things we started to track, and already having different formats back then, it was very hard to find an aggregated number in that sense and be able to interpret it well. So I usually compared it a little bit to the impressions that you get on LinkedIn. Right there, you get this impressions number. So back then, we reported already like an impressions number in the first year, which constituted of the, like, all of the, you know, people attending the different sessions, but also visitors on click rates on different of our digital assets, for example. And since obviously you will naturally have a couple of double countings in there, we're not allowed to track on user level. BSF has a great workers council, and like any other construct, we're not allowed and we don't track on user level. You will have double countings in such a number. But as long as you communicate that and help also, you know, for example, your management to interpret that number, I think it's still a good starting point for such an initiative. And we still, as a basic a KPI, we still also, you know, report on that. I think to really be effective, because that is more describing the output side, right? You want to get into the outcome and into the impact side. And I feel there's no way around also qualitative feedback for that and measuring kind of the qualitative success. What are people actually doing with what they have learned in your sessions? So we do also run voluntarily surveys, for example, among the people attending the different formats, the sessions. So that is something we also do in addition, but naturally it's voluntarily, so you won't ever get like the full picture. So overall, I really think that measuring success is not trivial with such initiative. And I also feel at the beginning, we were way more looking on awareness, right? So how much is the reach? So how well are we established? And now we definitely moved out of this awareness stage and are more in the area of measuring usage adoption of the you know, our formats, but also the tools that we're, for example, advertising internally. And I think the next step for us is then really moving into the impact measurement. What are people doing with the learnings, but also what are people doing maybe with AI in their day-to-day? How is it helping them? And I think that is the next step. And definitely I'm also in exchange with peers of how to do that, because again, I feel you need to find the right mix of KPIs for your team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we see that too. In the end, it will be a mix of KPIs you can measure, qualitative things you have to ask. Hopefully there might be also things you can observe, like an uptake of certain things happening, or the number of data products being built, or I've saw so many things by now, how you can try to do that. And and then you are more into the observation, qualitative feedback service.
Yeah, and I think by now I might be known a little bit for this in BSF, that whenever I have like a meeting and there's still like 3 minutes or 5 minutes of time at the end, and I just ask the HR colleague, look, how are you using AI? And is there anything that you need? And do you feel something's missing? And so by now, I guess like this is not working as well anymore because people are prepared when they see me. This actually helped me a lot in the beginning to really just get honest feedback and very direct and transparent feedback as well. And that was not always only positive, right? I mean, serving such a massive audience, especially now with the EU regulation and really doing this on this broad scale, by definition, you cannot make everyone equally happy. That's just the case. I think the important part is that you get the middle center right. You will lose some people on the edges who are more advanced, but we're happy that we have a great advanced curriculum for them. And you will maybe lose some people on the other tail who are not there yet, right? Or who maybe say like, this was just not my style of learning. And then I think that feedback is also very, very important. So I'm a big believer also in getting really this honest feedback. And that's what I'm really happy about. We do get a lot of anonymous feedback also on our, say, standard curriculum, which is rolled out very, very broadly. And we have really a fast update cycle supported by our colleagues who make sure that we really, not just get the smaller corrections, but really also, be able to work in content improvements pretty fast.
Excellent. Yasmin, we are at the end of our time, unfortunately. We could, I think, go on for quite a while, but let's maybe finish this discussion here with you, maybe summing it up. What do you think are the success factors for a data and AI academy? Or what are your biggest learnings that you would like to pass on? If someone now is thinking about, hey, how can I organize my learning here? How can I improve data literacy in my organization? What would your most important things you would like to pass on?
Yeah, thank you. Maybe let me start with, in my opinion, really still the most important thing. I feel you need to have the right people. You need to have people with passion, with expertise, and who are willing to be super proactive and flexible working in this very dynamic field. So, I could have started with having massive amounts of learning resources that you can put in, but I really feel that the people in the team and all of the people who really from the community supported this initiative early on, like they made the difference. Without them, this would not be here. And I guess really this is still the most important part, having the right mix of skills and responsibilities in your team, but also the people who actually want to do this. This is not, we're not a team of, I could do this work or like I could do whatever. We have people who are really passionate about this topic. Like even our learning specialist who has a non-technical background, she's passionate about AI. So I think that is making a huge difference. Having said that, yes, this is coming with resources. So you need to convince your management to also give you some form of budget that you could work with. Having said that, you saw we were starting out small as well, right? We were starting out with a lot of creativeness and, prioritizing well. I think prioritization, people, and definitely also having some access of resources internally or externally. I think these are important ingredients to get this started. And in the end, nothing of that works if you don't have a receiving end who wants to consume. So feel like don't underestimate the efforts that needs to build awareness and desire, in your audience to actually wanting to consume. And we are in the state of more being requested and really driven by requests and demand. And I feel that is the state that you want to be in for such an academy, instead of having the feeling you're just the one always pushing. Like people for us are really at least equally pulling the offers. And that's really great.
Interesting. So, I mean, demand generation is marketing in the end.
Yes.
Yeah? And you mentioned it during the podcast quite often. Yeah, communication, marketing, brand. You mentioned brand. Yeah. So you build a brand for the academy. All that helps to create that. Super interesting. Yasmin, thanks so much for sharing all your insights, all your experience with this unique opportunity that has been given to you. And it sounds really like you're doing a great job building this up. I wish you all the best luck for the future in continuing to build this. I mean, data and AI will be even more important in the future. So also the literacy around it. All the best to you. And I'm sure I see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Carsten. You too. Bye-bye.